in lighter terms, I guess, F you Zionists, you're killing all my people. Being Jewish myself, it has been like an ongoing trend that it's like you're surprised, but you're not surprised. And it's probably it is easily the most horrific thing that I've ever witnessed in my entire life. Just seeing these people's skin falling off their bodies, and blood and cuts, just like, I mean, it was horrific.
Oh, that's a young man named Brian, and he was an eyewitness to the horrific burning of elderly Jews marching on behalf of the hostages in Israel, just walking. They do it every Friday in honor of those hostages that are still in Gaza. And so this Mohammed Sabri Soliman, an illegal alien from Egypt, who came across the border under the Biden administration, and is now illegally there, is shouting what Brian just reported and setting them on fire. This happened in Boulder, Colorado. Boulder, Colorado. Really, maybe the center of liberalism, at least in the center part of the United States. All things secular and liberal kind of spring forth in Boulder and then spill over into greater Colorado. It's really amazing that it should happen there. It brought all kinds of thoughts to my mind about how the people, the Jews probably marching, are quite to the left. Many Jews in this country, of course, are atheists. Now, I'm assuming so, but they live in Boulder, and it's pretty much a godless place. So how interesting that that should happen there, and the repercussions of what the liberal left thinks about that. Their governor, it's a sanctuary state. He's an illegal immigrant. Just think about all the repercussions. It's a very interesting thing. But today we're going to focus on this whole business of the attacks worldwide against Jews. And I want to remind you that we just had another attack maybe 2 weeks ago now. And CBN did a great report on this. This is a reminder. So it's kind of the basis of our conversation today. This is clip 14.
The killing of a young Jewish couple, staffers at the Israeli embassy in Washington, has shocked the world. The suspect is charged with the murder of foreign officials. Court documents reveal the shooting was captured on surveillance video outside the museum. It reportedly shows Elias Rodriguez firing at the victims several times. After they fell to the ground, he then walked into the museum where he turned himself into police, telling them he did it for Palestine and Gaza. U.S. Attorney for D.C., Jeanine Pirro, told reporters Rodriguez also faces charges of hate crimes and terrorism.
Violence against anyone based on their religion is an act of cowardice. It is not an act of a hero. It is the kind of case that we will vigorously pursue. Anti-Semitism will not be tolerated, especially in the nation's capital.
The victims were planning to be engaged in Jerusalem next week. Both were dedicated to working towards building peace for Christians, Jews, and Muslims in the Middle East. Yaron made Aliyah to Israel at age 16 and served in the military. Born to a Jewish father and Christian mother, he was a member of Jerusalem's Messianic Christian community. Sarah Milgram was from Overland Park, Kansas, and involved with the local Jewish community. She graduated from the University of Kansas. At a vigil in her honor, a friend and former college roommate shared how Sarah advocated for reaching across political and religious divides for brokering peace. The fact that the tragic murder of the two Israeli embassy employees happened in the United States heightens the concern over the rising cases of Jewish hate, especially on college campuses. The Times of Israel reports a surge of 340% in acts of global anti-Semitism.
Well, I wanted you to revisit that. I realize that there's so much news that's kind of like old news, but it isn't old news, of course, because those young people were gunned down in America's capital, the District of Columbia, with the capital really in sight. You could see it from where they were shot. The girl, as I understand it, the shooter shot her several times, and she was crawling, and he was still shooting her. It is so violent and incomprehensible that we need to have a discussion about what's going on. And because this kind of violence and hatred is not aimed at just Jews. It is aimed at Christians, believers in the same God as well. We are the people of the book, and they hate us all. And so what's happening in our country and what's happening worldwide with this move of Islam? We're going to be talking about that today. But first, well, in 2022 in Washington, D.C., there was a really grisly discovery. There were five preemie babies found in the home of the director of a pro-abortion group. They could have lived. They were fully formed, and yet they were aborted. And so now many pro-life organizations are trying to get the Justice Department to prosecute a doctor and the people that helped do that. You know, abortion continues to make the news, and it's because it is such a horrific thing to think about a baby killed either by partial birth abortion or removed and then killed. And that's what's happening. It's still happening. The Biden administration did not prosecute that case. And so it's coming up again. You're going to be hearing about that. Well, that's why preborn really is the best solution to all of these abortion-related issues, because they try to get to the women in a most redemptive way by showing them little photos of their little babies inside their womb. It's a very creative, redemptive, beautiful way of stopping abortion, because when the moms see that, they choose to save their babies. Most of them do. And so that's why I bring preborn to your attention every time I'm at this mic, because they deserve your support. And of course, they also, the other wonderful thing about preborn is that they tend to the spiritual condition of the mom and even the partner, the father, if he's around. And so they do great work, and that's why they deserve our support. If you haven't donated to preborn before, it's just $28 for one ultrasound. That's to provide one ultrasound. And of course, any multiple of that, any amount, is really welcome. But I wanted to give you an idea of what the minimum would be. That would be $28, would help save the life of one baby. And so if you'd like to do that, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Well, you can call us at 662-821-2040. You can write us at sandy@afr.net. You can listen to us on any podcast platform. Our home base is afr.net. That's AmericanFamilyRadio.net. But all other podcast platforms, Spotify, Apple, whatever you like, Amazon, whatever you listen through, we are there. You can find us on social media, all the platforms. You can follow me on X and my Twitter handle. Isn't that lovely? I remember when they used to start saying that, I thought it was so funny. I could hardly bring myself to saying it. And now I'm saying it. It's at Sandy Rios Tweet. That's at Sandy Rios Tweet. Well, you can call us at 662-821-2040. You can write us at sandy@afr.net. You can listen to us on any podcast platform. Our home base is afr.net. That's AmericanFamilyRadio.net. But all other podcast platforms, Spotify, Apple, whatever you like, Amazon, whatever you listen through, we are there. You can find us on social media, all the platforms. You can follow me on X and my Twitter handle. Isn't that lovely? I remember when they used to start saying that, I thought it was so funny. I could hardly bring myself to saying it. And now I'm saying it. It's at Sandy Rios Tweet. That's at Sandy Rios Tweet. All right. Well, today we're going to go to Switzerland because our guest is there. He's in the beautiful Alps of Switzerland doing some business. But David Wormser is a scholar on the Middle East, a scholar on Islam. And it's a delight always to talk to him. And he'll join us from Switzerland on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
Are you supportive of Hamas?
Yes.
Yes, of course.
Yes.
Are most Palestinians? Yeah.
Palestinian people like Hamas.
I'm with the resistance.
Did you see the videos they posted of what they did on October 7th?
Everything.
And you're okay with all that?
With everything they did.
They killed innocent Israelis. They killed... Yes, no. They did.
No.
Yes, they did.
Give me a picture for rape.
Do you think Hamas should release the Israeli hostages?
No.
No. No.
Nothing named Israel.
There's nothing named Israel?
Yeah.
The Quran mentions Israel over 100 times. Is Palestine mentioned in the Quran?
No.
No. The murders Hamas did on October 7th, is that okay?
Yes. They have the right to do it.
The problem is not Hamas. We should look at the bigger picture.
They are living under occupation.
But Israel left Gaza in 2005.
True.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. That's a young man named Jack Sage Fox. He's Jewish. He's also gay. He went into Palestine, kind of posing as an Italian correspondent, and interviewed Palestinians on how they felt about the Jews. And you just heard their answers. And I think it's very, very instructive to all of us. Well, we have all of these outbreaks of, I'm not sure what to call it. I'm going to talk about it with our next guest. Hatred of Jews is certainly true. Murders in our country, murders on our streets, and it's becoming more prevalent. But it's not just here. It's really worldwide. So that's what I want to talk about today with our guest. It's David Wormser. You have heard him before. He's just terrific. He's a scholar for the Center for Security Policy on all things Mideast and Near East, politics and history. He was a former senior advisor to the NSC and has his PhD from Johns Hopkins and so many other things, but that gives you an idea. And he's actually talking to us from Switzerland this morning. I believe Switzerland, right, David?
That's correct.
Yeah, well, that's a long way, and it's very expensive over there.
Yes, I'm finding out. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. You know what?
Even a cup of coffee.
I remember buying a sandwich which was 15 years ago, $20, which was seemed exorbitant at the time. Now we're kind of getting there too. But David, are you seeing any signs? Are there any signs in Switzerland of anti-Semitism? I'd be interested. Do you know?
Well, yes. I've spoken to some Swiss, both non-Jews and Jews, and there is a great deal of concern. In Europe, a lot of the anti-Semitism is really driven by the Muslim immigration. There is a small little sort of neo-Nazi world out there, but that's really bouncing off these larger these Islamic immigrations. And the real alliance is the red-green alliance in Europe, which is you see the far left and the Islamic immigrants working together to commit terrorism. We've seen that. It's not new for Europe. The magnitude of it is very new, and how broad it is and how threatening it is of Jewish communities. But if you remember back in the 60s, you had things like the Bader-Meinhof gang and you had the Red Army faction, and they were training with the PLO in the Middle East. So you had already sort of the Arab world, KGB-sponsored Arab world attack on the West and on Israel, converging with this radical leftist world. But you've seen it, first of all, acquire a little bit more of an anti-Semitic flavor than anti-Israeli. And second of all, obviously, if there are some extreme neo-Nazis out there, they feel encouraged that the taboo has been broken on anti-Semitism by these Muslims and these radical leftists. So they're beginning to emerge too. Yeah. So you see sort of a red-green alliance turning into a red-green, and I emphasize still minority, but black alliance, that black meaning fascist, not racial. I mean the old color of fascism, yeah. Which is black, so red, green, black alliance.
Well,
but
you know,
again, I emphasize it's mostly the core of it is this red-green alliance, this communist or hardcore leftist Islamist alliance here.
You know, I thought also, you of course know this, but Hitler was working with the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, and that was a Muslim.
Yeah.
I mean, way back during World War II. So this does go back a very long way. It's really interesting, isn't it, David? Because, you know, like with the Nazis, for instance, or with the communist left, which is what it is. They want to dominate the world, and so do the Muslims. So at some point, this cooperation is going to reach, one of them is going to turn on the other, but we probably won't live long enough to see that. But it really is interesting. And, you know, the whole black hatred of the Jews came to my attention when I was in Chicago years ago. I had a regular guest who was a female who had her PhD from Harvard, and I just brought her in, and we would talk like once a month on racial issues, because in Chicago we had a huge black audience, and race was always an issue. And so she and I just had very frank discussions. But it's through her, you know, during commercial breaks, that she taught me how the Jews are hated in the black community. And I actually think she shared that hatred. So this is not new either. The first question I was actually going to ask you is, and I think you just answered it, which is the stronger driver of this new wave of Jew hatred, I'll just say, violence against Jews? Is it Islamic teaching or the secular left? Which do you think has the greater power right now, or has the greater influence?
Well, I think it's the Islamic teaching is, first of all, because it's so absolute. There's no qualms. There's no attempt to dress it as anything but hatred for Jews. And number one. And number two, they convinced people that there's a legitimacy to it because of Israel's behavior. So, we're not anti-Semitic, even though we say outright we're going to kill all the Jews, and we're attacking synagogues, and when you hear Arabs, it's often translated in texts when you hear speeches from the Arab world that it's Israel, but it's not. They say al-Yahud, which is Jew. So they don't really differentiate between Israel and Jew. But nevertheless, in the West, we've sort of felt that that's more legitimate because the Israelis and the Arabs have been wronged by the Israelis, so to speak. So there's sort of a action-reaction going on there, as opposed to the left, which some communists sitting in Chicago, and by the way, in the black community, the American black community, I think it also has a lot to do with the radicalization toward the left of the black community, because earlier on, people like Martin Luther King were actually intensely pro-Zionist and pro-Jewish. And so were some of the leaders long before. But this radicalization toward the left, it really only can dress itself up behind the Islamic Zionist Israeli equation. And therefore, it was a little attenuated. So without the Muslims really being at the core of it, I'm not sure it could have revived this way.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I'm sure that, of course, I think, I'll say as a Christian, I believe the driver of both sides is really the ancient serpent, Satan, who hates the Jews because they are God's people, and hates Christians because we're an offshoot of that, and then ultimately hates everyone who isn't Muslim. So that's really but I don't think people really understand that, David. I've been talking about this for years, and I'm going to touch on this even more after today in this show, after you and I stop talking. But I want to get from you some more current things. I'm watching, you know, Europe fairly implode. I've been watching clips all morning and last night in Paris, in London. Just the most horrific things happen. Seller girl sitting at a desk. This guy comes in and just overwhelms her and drags her off camera. And, I mean, there's just violence everywhere. And the caption is, women are not safe in Britain. But Europe is being overrun, Paris and London and Sweden and Germany. And so do you think that I know that can seem as though it's the dominant condition of those countries. Do you see it as, what is the scope? How big is the scope in Europe from your perspective?
I think it's great. It's great not only because the Muslims have managed to begin to hit fairly substantial numbers of the population, probably even higher than is officially admitted, between 10 and 20% in some places. The problem is they've hit much larger numbers in the cities, and the cities in Europe are really the drivers of politics, much more so than the countryside, much to the anguish of the non-urban elites in Europe. It's a big tension here. The second thing is the youth. If you go down in age, the balance is very dramatically toward more the Muslim side, which then points to the central problem, which is even before the Muslims started immigrating into Europe, I think the overall failure of Europe's elites to sustain their culture, because they descended into this socialist worldview that was attacking their own civilization, this anti-national point of view. And I understand from World War II they were afraid of nationalism, but when you look at fascism, the fascists weren't really truly just nationalists. There was an ideology behind it. Nationalism itself is also essential for democracy. You need a community, you need to define that community, and you need to have then, therefore, a bounded population within which you have elections and so forth. So nationalism is important. So Europe did away or has been attacking its nationalism from a socialist point of view. And the proof's in the pudding. The demography of Europe started collapsing. You have an inverted population pyramid, which is a very dangerous situation for any society. It's also one of the key leading indicators of societal collapse. When you just can't maintain your population.
Yeah.
So already you started seeing the collapse of European demography before even the Muslims entered the picture. But then in order to sustain their socialist structure, they needed youth to work, and they didn't have any to sustain it. So they started allowing large immigrations from the Middle East and North Africa. And then you get a compounded problem. One is a demographic collapse of Europe, and two, you have a replacement demography setting in. But behind all this is a European elite collapse in self-confidence, preservation of their own society, their own heritage, frankly, of Christianity, too. And as a result, Europe is in much deeper trouble than simply the Muslim presence here.
Yeah. No, I know that's true, David. I lived in Berlin for a few years, and I just have a real interest in what's going on in Europe. So I watched that pretty carefully. But, of course, even when I was there years ago, the Christian influence in Europe, in Germany in particular, and in Europe in general, was so small. I mean, it had just been reduced to almost rubble then. And so, and I really think, you know, I personally think that the only thing that can really counter Islam is a faith in the true God. I mean, Jews are the ones who have courage, and so are Christians. I mean, we have courage because we know who we serve, and He is Almighty. And when we lose sight of that, we lose all of our moorings. Nobody has the courage to go up against this kind of erratic, horrific, relentless violence through the centuries. It has never changed. And so I do think Europe is in big trouble. But now how about the United States? And I want to talk about the attack on Boulder in particular in just a second. But what's your perspective, David, on how we've had all of this influx of immigration. Many of them are Muslim, some illegal, and Obama brought over thousands that were legally brought into this country. And they have not assimilated because, I can't say all have not, most have not, because Sharia and Islamic teaching is not compatible. So what kind of danger are we in, you think, right now from radical Islam?
Well, I think we're behind Europe in the danger. Namely, we're not as far along as Europe is, but some of the same trend lines are there. First of all, we did have somewhat of a demographic decline. I don't want to say collapse here. The numbers don't justify saying collapse, but there is a decline. In America, though, religion still matters, and as a result, you're seeing there are populations in America where you see a decline, and there are populations in America where you don't see a decline. So there's still a lot of hope there. And, of course, the more the correlation between the religiousness index and the demographic index is pretty close. So in many ways, it's making America more religious, but it's also making America have the foundations for some sort of a demographic turnaround. But nonetheless, I think you see it several vectors here coming together. First of all, is the general immigration question, which is an economic question. It's a question of our societal health and the preservation of our society. But then you started seeing the security, and that's where you start getting into what happened in Colorado and so forth, where you started seeing whether it's Trandagua and gangs or whether it's terrorists like this guy in Colorado. And my bet is there's a lot more out there. We probably have some CCP, Chinese Communist Party, operatives that have crossed the border. We certainly have some operatives from the Middle East that have crossed the border. So you have the security structure that now is threatened by this uncontrolled border. And then that's vectoring together with the larger problem of our universities collapsing and this political climate on the left that has legitimized violence. It isn't just against Jews. You saw it with this Luigi, Mangione or something, who killed the head of United Healthcare.
Right.
And you started seeing mainstream elements of the left legitimizing it as if he's some sort of a Robin Hood killing this poor family man. So you started seeing this vortex together of legitimizing violence by the left. And then that's part of the global trend. And the global trend is that this Islamic radicalism is out to destroy us. Us being America and the West and Western civilization, the whole Plato to NATO continuum. It isn't out to destroy just Israel or the Jews or specific religious Christians. It's out to destroy the West as a whole.
Yeah.
All that's coming together now with the presence in America of people who are doing what we're beginning to see happen. And it's a threat. It's a national security threat on every level, and an economic threat, and a societal threat.
Yeah. David, I know that I'm sure that you'd probably met Noni Darwish, but there's a clip of her just kind of, it's a very concise clip, but she lays out, we can't go into the teachings of Islam and all of that in this time that we have together today, but she says it well. She's a former Muslim. She's now an American. And this is what she says about how Islam thinks and how they work. This is clip 9.
I don't think you need intelligence to know what the plans of Islam are. It's very clear. And it's not just the Muslim Brotherhood, Howard. This is the basic core of what Islam wants to do. This is the basis of Sharia, Islamic law. World domination is part of Islamic ambitions. You have to understand the impact on Islam on society is tyranny. And there is a reason for it. Islam by nature is not a religion. It's not just a faith between you and God. Islam by nature is a state. Islam by nature seeks to control people through government. So by nature, Islam is government. And if you welcome Islam in your midst, you are welcoming the seed for a coup d'etat in your system. You are welcoming the seed of a revolution in your country. Islam is by nature revolutionary against the system.
Okay. Noni Darwish, she said it well, didn't she, David?
She really did. She really did. Noni is one of the best out there. There are a few others. There's Asra Nomani. There's Dan Bormawi, Ayan Hirsi Ali, Sana Ibrahimi. There are people out there who come from within Islam, and they're explaining to us, and it's uncomfortable for us Americans because, you know, we have sort of a balance and equilibrium here where various denominations of Christianity and Judaism don't want to politicize our differences. So we basically have removed the judgment politically of religions from our lexicon. But Islam is a political religion. And to be honest, I mean, if we're going to be honest, it is essentially a totalitarian ideology in the form of a religion. And it isn't just a religion the way the way Episcopalians are, or the way Jews are, or Reform Jews, or whatever. It is itself a whole political system, and that political system is inherently opposed to the values upon which the Judeo-Christian culture is based. I mean, people talk about Abrahamic faith. There really is no such thing, unless you're talking about Judeo-Christian. But the Judeo-Christian view of things starts with the near sacrifice of Isaac, where God essentially established the principle that the individual life of the person is God takes, not men. Men don't have reign over, even a father over his own son. He can only do essentially what the divine will is. He can't himself decide who lives and who dies. Similarly, you know, you get again and again this focus on individual freedom and individual liberty grounded in Judeo-Christian values. For example, the Tower of Babel is built with bricks. Bricks are uniform little blocks, means the individual is erased to create this large edifice, as opposed to Joshua's altar, which was to be constructed out of unhewn stones. Why? Because an edifice is built on the individual characteristics that God gave each individual. So you see again and again and again in Judeo-Christian culture this emphasis on individuals as being a divine and quote, inalienable rights of individuals. In Islam, it's all about community. If you're part of the community, then you have rights as a Muslim. But if you're not part of the community, then your inherent rights don't exist. So right there, you see a fundamental difference. And then on top of it all, it's a politicized religion. So it's not just they have these values and they say, look, we'll do it in the mosque, you do it in your church or synagogue, but in the mosque, just let us be who we are. The problem is that there is this inherent need or inherent element of Islam that demands the subjugation of any other religion. It's not a passive, nor is it capable of being passive. It's inherent that the spreading of Islam, not through convincing people, but even by the sword, that the subjugation of other peoples is inherent to Islam. It's part of the jihad ethos, which is one of the key values of Islam. Right. So you can't really get around it, as uncomfortable as it is for us Americans to admit.
Well, this is, you know, I'm telling you, David, this is a battle. Since I was in D.C. 20-plus years ago at Concerned Women for America, that was right after 9/11, I had to become sort of a quasi-expert, you know, nothing like you, but a lay expert on Islam. And I know people didn't want to hear it. And I was there when suddenly the tide turned and we weren't allowed, at least they said that we weren't allowed, to criticize Islam. And then, of course, even under Bush, and that's when it started, they started welcoming all kinds of, even people from the Muslim Brotherhood, into the White House and telling us it was a peaceful religion. And so they really dulled and just drove a stake through the heart of our understanding. Because right after 9/11, Washington, D.C. was just working alive to fight back this threat. And we understood. The FBI understood. My husband was a member was in the FBI then. I didn't know him then, but they understood Islam, but now we don't. And so we can't, and we're politically incorrect if we try to say what's really true, but we have to say it.
And also we don't understand Islam in the sense that it's not only these bad things that they're supposed to do and that are in the Quran and in the hadiths of the Prophet. It's that, you know, we have things. They employ, or people in the West employ, this moral relativism and say, well, you know, look at the Bible. If a guy's eyes poked out, you got to poke out the other guy's eyes. So eye for an eye. But we have interpretation and we have human faculty and free will to understand and interpret this. In Islam, you don't, or at least Sunni Islam, you don't, because the Quran, the Hadith, are essentially the words of God, and it isn't upon man to interpret the words of God. God's word is perfect. Why would it need interpretation? And man, altogether, assuming a degree of sovereignty or divine characteristic to be arrogant enough to interpret the word of God. That's Islam. So when it says eye for an eye, it means eye for an eye. If it says you go out and, you know, you will eat, your Christian neighbor has to live and pay taxes to the superior revelation, the true faith Islam, or worse, he has to be converted by sword and his daughter sold into slavery, sex slavery or whatever, that's in the Quran. That's what the hadiths are about. And that was perfection. So that's what you do. You don't interpret it.
Yep.
So we can't equate even things in our own Bible that have elements that maybe we're a little uncomfortable with, like eye for an eye, with that, because it's understood that it was eye for an eye, for example, meant value. That if you poke somebody's eye out, you should be compensated sort of a similar amount to what the loss of your eye would mean, that there's a balance or proportionality. That's not in Islam. It's literal. Yeah. And so we have to accept what they say as literal. And when you read what they say literal, it is chilling and terrifying and violent.
All right. Yes. And so that I'm going to pivot to an example of that, which just took place in Boulder, Colorado, where Mohammed Sibri Suleiman, who's an Egyptian citizen here illegally, set on fire about, I think, many elderly Jews. I think six were injured. I think that's the count at this point. I mean, burned them, tried to burn them alive, shouting Free Palestine and other things. Okay, so that brings me to Egypt, David. That brought up all kinds of memories, because out of Egypt, most people listening won't remember this, but the Muslim Brotherhood, who is the Sunni head, I suppose, of the Sunni branch of Islam, was Egypt is its home base, and it nearly destroyed Egypt, and then a general named Sisi came up and put the Muslim Brotherhood down. Okay, so let's talk just for a second about there's just so much to say about Egypt and Israel and the conflict, but bringing up to date, Egypt had signed on to the Abrahamic Accords, had they not?
Well, they made peace with Israel, actually before the Abraham Accords, but yes, they are in a state of peace with Israel. There's a lot to say about that because it's a bit frayed and there's lots going on in Egypt. Like you said, it's a very complex issue. But technically, Egypt is at peace, and Sisi, the leader of Egypt, is at peace still with Israel.
Oh, that's real interesting to hear. I'm interested. That's interesting, David, because I had the impression that tie had been broken because I think they found all these secret tunnels from Egypt into Israel.
You're right. And that, you see, formally they're at peace. You're not seeing the Egyptian military opening up front against Israel in this 7 or 8 front war that Iran has launched. So they're not joining the Houthis in bombing Israel. But Egypt, through various things, one is a general deeper hostility that is in Islam, and the rise of Islam in Egypt is terrifying the regime. And frankly, the regime is somewhat dysfunctional, so it's losing control. So you're seeing a lot of this Islamic element to trying to appease it, and that's making Egypt more and more hostile to Israel. The second thing is, as I said, it's really dysfunctional. So corruption is in many ways the most prevalent form of economic activity. And one of the biggest corrupt elements was the smuggling of weapons into Gaza to arm Hamas to launch these wars. And it's not a minor amount of smuggling. When we hear smuggling, we think millions of dollars. No, probably the leadership of Egypt was making between $2 to $4 billion a year on bribes from the smuggling, which means it's a line item. These economies are not so great, are not so big in Egypt. They don't have a lot of production. So $4 billion, $2 to $4 billion is a lot of money, especially since it goes to the wealth of the leadership of the military and the government. So these things flow together. So Egypt, and then finally, Egypt is showing signs strategically of, while it says it's still at peace, it's acting in certain ways to indicate that it it may not stay at peace soon.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's
so
very concerning.
Yes, and yes, because you're right there next to each other, and they've been allies for many, well, allies of sorts for many years. And here's Mohammed Sabri Salomon. He comes out of that, entered through the southern border illegally. So that's, I just wanted to tie those things together for people to understand. I do not want to run out of time with you before I ask you to bring us up to date on what Israel's what's happening in Gaza right now with Israel.
What's happening in Gaza is that the Israelis are gearing up for the final sort of push. I think they're still hoping that the big looming pressure of the final push may cause the one more deal to come through where 10 hostages are let out alive. And that's also the American hope. Because once Israel starts with this huge final push, it's likely, or at least quite possible, that all the hostages will be killed. And the Israelis simply, it's their vulnerable underbelly. Even for Americans, we don't understand how much they prioritize the hostages. As an American, I find it strategically dangerous on some level because they're validating hostage taking as an effective strategy, and that means in the future there will be a lot more of it. But nonetheless, they're very sensitive to it, and the government specifically, because it was under this government and this security establishment that they were taken hostage. So they feel we've abandoned these guys once. We don't want to abandon them again. So they're trying still to scare Hamas into coughing up at least a few more hostages. But it's not going to happen, most likely. So Israel will go all the way. And if there is another deal, it'll only be for a month or two. And then Israel goes all the way. And it will essentially reoccupy Gaza. And then the Trump plan hopefully kicks in. And the Trump plan is a voluntary immigration of Palestinians to greener pastures. Most of Gaza's destroyed. It's not a livable place right now. It would take 10 to 15 years to rebuild it and hundreds of billions of dollars to do so. So in many ways, both for the Palestinians and for the world, it's much more effective to have them resettled. And many Palestinians only two, three generations back came from other countries. We think these people have been living here for 2,000 years. There is a core of Arabs who might have been Christians and Jews before that converted, or some other ethnicity, and there's maybe even Arabs that immigrated in 1,000 years ago. But we don't realize that about half of all Palestinians immigrated, their families immigrated into Palestine after World War I. So they came from Iraq, Syria, Egypt, and their names betray that. If you knew Arabic, their names like Al-Masri means the Egyptian, or on the Al-Iraqi or Al-Suri means Syrian, or the geographic origins of these families and clans is still in their names, and also tribes. Tribes are non-geographic. They have these broad ranges of geographies, but it's not just in Israel. The tribes in northern Israel are actually the same as the Iraqi tribes, and the tribes in southern Israel are the same ones as those that go all the way down to Mecca. So when you're talking about indigenous Palestinian population, you're talking about a fairly recent immigration, as recent or more so than even the Jewish immigration. And by the way, Jews were always present in Palestine. They never fully left either.
Oh, no, you're mistaken, David.
The plan has historic and demographic validity to it as well.
Yeah, I was just kidding you. I want to make sure. I need to hasten to say, I said as you were talking, oh, you can't be right about that. But of course you're right about that. Because the common wisdom is, you know, that the Palestinians have been usurped and the Jews are usurping the territory. And so it's just a mess. But I that's a nice place to leave our discussion, David. I think some hope that Israel is making ground, making gains, and also that Egypt is still technically at peace with Israel. I'll settle for that in this moment. But David Wormser, again,
I'm nervous with you on that, though.
Yeah, yes. And next time, I mean, there's so much to talk about. This is such a centuries, millennia-old problem, and it won't be solved in one discussion. But I just appreciate your expertise so much, David. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
No, thank you. David Wormser, a scholar for the Center for Security Policy, and we'll talk to him soon again, I hope. This is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Did you know that since Roe v. Wade was passed, and that was back in 1973, over 66 million babies have been aborted in the United States? That's nearly one in five pregnancies terminated. With the abortion pill now available at local pharmacies and through the mail, a woman's bathroom now has become the scene of the crime. And that's where she tragically expels her child. We have to stop this, and you know how to do that. Preborn is a master at saving these babies and their moms. Go to preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. That's preborn.com/Sandy.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
All right, you might wonder where that sound is coming from. It sounds like the Middle East, right? But it isn't. It's London, England. It's a car with a loudspeaker going down the street, and he's shouting things I can't say. Blank the Jews, free Palestine, and then rape the daughters, rape the children. That's on the streets of London. That's the streets of London. And meanwhile, in France, this is the sound of a mob in Paris, right downtown. I'm not sure how to say, savaging a beautiful black car. And I want you to hear it, and then I'll describe a little bit more about what they're doing. This is clip 11.
Oh, no, 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 no. Oh, no, no. Les gars, on peut la venir. Oh, no, no. Oh, no, no. Ah, ouais, non. Comment il a fait ce truc? Non. Non. Ah, ouais, non. Non.
All right, well, you get the idea. This is downtown Paris, and these are hordes of Muslims from all over the world. In fact, you know that Paris actually has a no-go zone, but violence on the streets of Paris is, we've discussed it at this show before. People are just attacked on the streets randomly, and the police can't even go into the no-go zones. In that case, they were ripping the car apart. They weren't even stealing. They were just taking, like if they saw computers or electronics, they were just destroying them. It's truly frightening. And I want to remind you that in France, Marine Le Pen is the one who's been, she's a female who's been the voice of conservative French for several years now. And she certainly was leading with the stopping this out-of-control immigration and controlling, trying to get back in control of radical Islamist young men who've come into the country and are wreaking havoc. But guess what France did to her? The powers that be in France arrested Marie Le Pen, or they charged her with crimes that can put her in prison, and they are refusing to let her run again for office, and she's in the lead in the polls. This is the state of Europe. When I was talking with David, this will help you to understand how serious this is. The same thing is happening in England. We did speak a few weeks ago about the rapes that were taking place in a certain part of England in this particular story. And it was, I forget the country that these Islamic men were coming from, but they were raping young girls, and the police were covering for them, and the people that were speaking up about it were the ones that were being arrested. This is the state of Europe. This is the state of Europe. And so that reminds me then of Egypt, because we were, not Europe, but the same problem, but different. Egypt, of course, is the birthplace of the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood is the entity in this country that has infiltrated so deeply. And I would just say this, I could spend an hour talking to you about this, but this is when I first became aware, and this happened, started on 9/11. It was members of the Muslim Brotherhood who perpetrated. Osama bin Laden was part of the Muslim Brotherhood. And the Muslim Brotherhood, the FBI, during this trial called the Holy Foundation trial, discovered all kinds of things. And I'm going to remind me to come back to that. But I want to tell you that Bruce was in Chicago. The Holy Land Foundation was based in Chicago. And they were the heartbeat of Islamic propaganda. And they were, I don't know why Chicago, but that's where it was. And Bruce was on his first day as legal counsel to in the Chicago Bureau when the call came in that there was a surveillance going on at the Holy Land Foundation because there was a suspicion that things were happening that shouldn't. And the caller called from within the building and said, they're shredding all of this evidence. They're shredding it. And someone leaked that to the press in Chicago, and they went wild saying that, what they did was they called the Holy Land Foundation and told them that the FBI was surveilling them. And that's when they began to shred massive amounts of information. But the FBI, and Bruce is the one that ordered this, the FBI went in there and actually was able to confiscate lots of information. So during that trial, the Holy Land Foundation trial then, fast forward a few years from that, and I think it took place in Virginia, they found this manual of their plans for this country. Now, you never hear this, do you? Because we're not allowed to talk about this, but I've never stopped talking about it because it's a warning to all of us. They talk about how they're going to infiltrate, get into the highest levels of government, and the last phrase that I remember is that they said, we're going to destroy their miserable house from within. So that's just part of their plan. That's the ultimate goal for the penetration of people who embrace Sharia, which is like if Muslims don't embrace Sharia, which is the law that tells them they have to kill or convert or kill infidels, and everyone that's not Muslim is an infidel, is Muslim orthodoxy. It would be like you could be a Christian but not believe much about the Bible, care about it very much, but you could say you're a Christian. That kind of a Muslim might not ever, be a danger to you. But I personally, I've always felt that any Muslim living in this country needs to declare their fealty to the United States and to the Constitution, because as Noni Darwish in that clip told us earlier, Islam is actually a state. It is a set of laws, and it is not compatible with the U.S. Constitution or with this country. It's not compatible with freedom. It's not compatible. It's diametrically opposed. And so that's where we are with this. And when they discovered that, of course, the FBI went to work, and then they were shut down completely, first by George W. Bush, and I could go into that story in great detail, but I won't. And then, of course, when Barack Obama came in, it was a full speed ahead to let Muslim Brotherhood infiltrate the military and the chaplaincy in Congress, and they're there now. You see them, don't you? Yeah, they don't have much loyalty to this country. So this is how it all started. Well, this reminds me of the foolishness of the press, because Egypt was a hotbed of Islamic jihad, a hotbed. And yet the press and the left kept insisting that that was Islamophobic. To say that, it was Islamophobic. Well, you might remember a reporter, I believe she was with probably CBS at that time, Lara Logan, the beautiful Lara Logan, who now does a podcast and says all kinds of really good things, does some great investigating. Well, Lara didn't used to be on the team of truth. I think she thought she was telling the truth. But I want to illustrate this. She was doing a live report from downtown Cairo, and there are mobs of Muslim men all around her. She has the cameraman and I think the director, and I'm not sure if there's another person. And listen carefully to the first thing she says in this report. And listen, she is being interviewed by Scott Pelley on CBS 60 Minutes, so you'll hear his voice. And then I'll fill in some of the blanks. But this is a story many of you may never have heard. But this is Lara Logan, probably 20 years ago, in Cairo, Egypt. And let's listen.
This is what these people have been waiting for. They came here day after day. This is about freedom.
She reported without a hint of trouble for more than an hour.
And what happened then?
Our camera battery went down. And we had to stop for a moment, and suddenly Baha looks at me and says, we've got to get out of here.
Baha is not happy here?
He's Egyptian, he speaks Arabic, and he can hear what the crowd is saying.
Yes.
He understands what no one else in the crew understands.
That's right. I was told later that they were saying, let's take her pants off. And it's like suddenly, before I even know what's happening, I feel hands grabbing my breasts, grabbing my crutch, grabbing me from behind. I mean, it's not, you know, one person and then it stops. It's like one person and another person, another person. And I know Ray is right there and he's grabbing at me and screaming, Lara, hold on to me, hold on to me.
As she was pulled into the frenzy, the camera recorded her shout.
Stop! And I'm screaming, thinking, if I scream, if they know, they're going to stop. You know, someone's going to stop them, or they're going to stop themselves because this is wrong. And it was the opposite. This is the more I screamed, it turned them into a frenzy.
Okay, so that's Lara Logan with Scott Pelley about 20, probably 25 years ago, I'm not sure. But what you probably couldn't hear is as she's reporting in the middle of that crowd, she insisted these people are coming here day after day because this is about freedom. This is about freedom. This was the nonsense that the left was feeding us, and that Lara obviously believed, or she would not have put herself right in the middle of all of these Muslim men. She had no idea what she was doing. She had no idea. And she's shocked when they actually begin to do what they do. This is what they do. They have no respect for women. They kill their wives. They beat their wives. Women don't have any rights whatsoever. And she's in the middle of this very dangerous situation. And you don't hear the rest of it because I didn't want you to. But let me just say that I don't know. I haven't talked to Lara. I've never talked to her personally. I'm not sure how she interprets that yet. But it really is a great example to all of us of the naivety of Americans when it comes to radical Islam. And you know, it's funny because all of these years that I've been doing radio and media after I left, after 2001, after the attack on 2001, you know, I fought so hard on this that I was labeled as a woman against Islam by the SPLC. It was Claire Lopez and, I can't even think of names, people that you know. Judge Jeanine was on there, lots of other people, because we spoke out about what, there were probably 12 of us. And they did renderings, black and white sketches of our faces and put our general vicinity. They didn't give our address, but they put our general vicinity. And at the time, we understood that was a fatwa. And a fatwa is when you, like the mob, puts a hit on someone. And so I was living in this big apartment building in close to downtown D.C. with Bruce, of course. But still, we had at least one Islamist in our building. We knew it. Bruce just knew it. And so it was, look, I don't want to overstate my own thing. I'm just trying to tell you how involved I was with this issue. And so the whole issue has kind of wafted away. the whole notion of Islamophobia won that battle of conversation. And for the press and for others, you know, it's like you can't tell the truth about Islam. But I never stopped telling it. And I knew at some point it would be back in our country. It would raise its ugly head and its wicked, violent head. And that's what's happening now. And so I want you to be equipped to understand. And I would end the show by repeating what I said to David, but maybe even more passionately. The only counter to this kind of wickedness is the Lord Jesus Christ, the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords. He fills his people with the power to withstand, to fight in the right way. I will never forget, did any of you remember in Egypt, there was an incident 25 years ago, 20 years ago, where these Christians, brand new believers, they were all men, were captured by Islamists. And I believe they were Egyptian, and they had converted. Coptic Christians have existed in Egypt since the beginning of Egypt, since the beginning of Christianity. So they were on a beach in these orange jumpsuits, and the Islamists went to them one by one and asked them to renounce their faith. And one by one, they wouldn't do it. And one by one, they were beheaded. Now, I'm telling you, the only thing that gives people courage to do things like that or to fight and to push back this kind of satanic teaching. Remember, part of Muhammad's revelation was called the Satanic Verses. So the only power that can compete against that and win is the power of the Lord Jesus Christ. So I want to leave you with that because he is our rock and our salvation, and we don't have to be afraid, but we need to be smart because we have a future to consider and fight when we need to and speak the truth when we must as well. But I hope this helps you to understand what's beginning to happen in this country. It's not just a hatred for Jews, although it is. But it really is really from the belly of that ancient serpent that in the garden tried to, you know, destroy what God had designed. And he did. And the earth is groaning under the weight of sin and rebellion, the nature, mankind. And certainly Satan tried to destroy Jesus' mission to save the world. He is the prince of this world. Satan is. God has allowed that. And so he's raging, and we need to recognize it and stand appropriately and equip ourselves like Ephesians 5 tells us to do. All right, well, I think I've given you enough charges today, and they're charges for me too, as you very well know. It's something I take very seriously. I pray in the work that I do, I've always prayed fervently because I know I'm on dangerous turf. And so, but God has sustained me, and I know he will till I breathe my last breath, and he will do the same for you. Well, I want to thank you for listening, and I want to thank our sponsor, Timothy Plan, because they show us how to put our money where our values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.